Welcome to Shetland with Laurie, a podcast dedicated to Shetland, the place and the people, with me, Laurie Goodland, a writer and tour guide based at 60 degrees north. The Shetland with Laurie podcast is for people who have visited Shetland, or who would like to visit, or for those who would just like to know a little bit more about life here. So welcome, I'm so glad you're here. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the podcast. This was an accidental podcast, so I might lapse into dialect a bit more than usual, and I don't welcome my guests in the same way as what I normally do. But today's episode is with Greg McCarron from the Shetland Film Archive. Greg has been working for several years with the Film Archive, which is a charitable organisation that collects, preserves and protects the film material of Shetland, making it publicly available to be enjoyed. And recently the group received some funding to digitise more film material. So that's kind of what I'm chatting to Greg about in this call. And when I listened back, I realised that it was quite an interesting topic, and Greg went into so much detail about the importance of film and kind of the more technical aspects, and I thought it would make a great podcast episode. So that is how we ended up with a podcast. Also, for those that are keen to get involved, then listen to Greg and find out how you can volunteer to help the Film Archive, because like many other charitable organisations, they're always looking for volunteers to help them out kind of behind the scenes. So Greg is also an old friend, and he now lives on the Scottish mainland. He grew up here in Shetland, but he works for Scottish TV, STV, on the mainland. So it was really lovely to catch up with him and kind of hear how he was getting on. So in this episode, we find out about the films that the Film Archive holds, and kind of just a bit about why film is an important kind of media forum and what it can do for us historically, what it can tell us about the past. And we also kind of dive into some of the technical stuff that I have no idea about, like when we start to see sound coming into these films, because most of the films, if not all of them, that the Film Archive have on their YouTube channel are all kind of silent moving images. So Greg kind of explains a bit about the history of when we start to see sound coming into film. So I found out a lot when I spoke to Greg, and I hope that you enjoy listening to this. And so yeah, let's just dive in and hear what Greg has to say.
I suppose firstly, when and why was the Shetland Film Archive started, and what is your main purpose, like what's your aim at the organisation?
Sure. Well, the archive has existed as a group in some form since about 2007. It was kind of spearheaded by Joanne Jameson and Karen Emsley, who kind of had this vision for a kind of community led organisation that could help kind of collect, preserve, and protect film material of Shetland and make it publicly available so everyone could benefit from it, because it's something that hadn't been covered as extensively. Like the Shetland Archives and the Community Trust had done a bit of collecting of film, but not in any kind of great way. So we thought they thought it'd be good if there was an organisation that was just specialised in moving image material, especially considering that if you're speaking about film material like 16mm Super 8, that degrades over time. So yeah, the longer you leave it, eventually it will completely fall apart, and then you've lost what can be a very valuable record of culture, history. So really the kind of aims of it was to collect, preserve, protect, and make publicly available.
Yeah, that was actually one of my questions. One of the things I was thinking about was about how film archive material does degrade. And so mm-hmm. a lot of folk, like I came out with my museum hat on, but a lot of people in the community will not be aware that actually their films will degrade over time. So what would your advice to them be?
Certainly the advice would be not to watch it through like a projector. I mean, like that because obviously as it gets more fragile over time, if you run it through a projector, like there's a good chance that it will completely break apart if you do that. So really the only course of action with that kind of material is professional digitization. Mm-hmm. And that is by its nature quite an expensive thing that people can't necessarily afford to do that themselves. Again, that's why one of the charitable objectives of the Shetland Film Archive is to, where possible, where we have the funding, is to digitize that material at no cost to the original donor. So we would do it on their behalf and get it done professionally to a professional standard, and then return a digital copy to the family, which they can watch forever, really. Unfortunately, we can't do quite as much as we would like because we are quite a small organization. So it depends on funding we've been able to get, and also a big limitation we have is just manpower. We're quite a small committee and quite a small collection of volunteers. Yeah. So we know for a fact that there is film material in Shetland that we have identified that we would like to digitize, but we've just not quite gotten there yet.
In terms of organization, you are a charity, and how many people what's thy role within the organization, and how many people are involved with it?
So I'm the chairperson of the charity. We have a committee of trustees, and at the moment that committee it's a committee of six members, including myself. We've also engaged with people to kind of join with us on like a volunteer role. In particular, we're quite interested in people to join as cataloging volunteers. So that involves kind of watching the material and then writing down descriptions, which would go on the website, that would help people better navigate the material and make it more searchable.
And that's actually maybe quite a nice thing for people to do that are finding that they've got a bit more time on their hands at the moment and they're looking for something to do. Like, it's a chance to watch some old films and just catalogue it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's one of the aspects of working with the Film Archive that I most enjoy. Like, when we get a hard drive sent back from the film lab, and quite often when we send films away, we haven't really had a chance to see entirely what's on it. Or sometimes it's, you know, so it's just kind of sent away, it's digitized, and then it's returned. And yeah, that's always fun, just kind of seeing what's been captured. And because like it's people's personal family films on the whole, like you get like a really interesting look at how ordinary people lived their lives in the past.
Yeah.
Whereas like other archives, like I work in the archive at STV, for example, which is a news-based archive. And you get really good material in those kind of archives, but it's not personal. Yeah. Family moments and the whole, it's, and like people behave differently in front of broadcast cameras than they would in front of their own cameras.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm always interested in like in the difference between kind of a photograph and a film, and like how do you feel a film captures a narrative or a history differently to a photo, or does it? Do you think it's different?
I mean, I think it absolutely does. I mean, I think that like the big difference clearly is the movement. I think as soon as you see somebody move in a piece of film, it just gives you a completely different perspective than a still image. You kind of get more of a sense for the people and like, you know, like how they carried themselves and how they moved and, you know, pats on the shoulder and hugs and all this kind of stuff. It really kind of brings people to life in a way that I think still photographs can't quite manage.
Yeah. And why is film or any of these kind of historical documents, like why are they important to us historically, and what can they give us?
I think that's a really good question.
Sorry, it's a big question.
It's a good question. I mean, like there's so many benefits to having a collection of moving image material, especially relating to a particular community such as Shetland. I think that, I mean, the most obvious benefit is that it kind of gives you great perspective on the kind of history and culture of a place. So you kind of see how people lived their lives, you see how people worked, and how communities, you know, operated. And in a lot of ways, you see, even though the footage we may be looking at is from the 1950s or the 1960s, you can see similarities in how people interact and like kids playing and all those kind of universal things that makes you realize that the people who lived maybe 100 years ago, you know, they're still people in the same way that we are, and they still have the same, you know, kind of lived the same kind of lives and same emotions and same family relationships. So I think it brings you kind of closer to the past in that sense. There's also, I mean, on the back of that, there's also really good health and well-being objectives. Like one of our main objectives in the archive is health and well-being. And we've done things in the past like reminiscence screenings in care homes and things where you can show people footage from the past. And sadly, when you have people that have dementia, sometimes it's the older memories that are intact the longest. So for them, it can be a really, really valuable experience to kind of see that material and kind of relive that part of their lives again. We actually had, a few years ago now, we had a situation where we were shown a screening in a care home of material that we got from the National Library, and there was a wedding on screen, and the bride of the wedding was a resident in the care home, and she had never seen the footage since it was filmed. And it was the care staff that kind of recognized her. And she had this vague memory of there being somebody at her wedding with a camera, but I'd never seen it.
But she'd never seen it?
No, she didn't even know the film that existed. So like, that was a really, really special moment.
Yeah.
And I think, and like the kind of other objective, I think, which is really good for film material, and we're very keen on the archive, is that moving image material can be a great creative resource as well. Like we've done projects in the past where we've encouraged people to kind of make short films based on archive material. We've run some projects through the Shetland College with music students composing scores for archive material and kind of engaging with it in kind of a creative way. So we're keen to kind of promote the fact that archive material isn't just something to be kind of taken off the shelf and looked at and thought, oh, isn't that nice, and then put it back on the shelf. You know, it's really good if it can be used in creative ways and new ways of appreciating archive and projects and things.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you're thinking about how people connect to film, it's a lot of the films are kind of within living memory, and so it's that kind of nostalgia for the past as well. So you're maybe sometimes only bringing somebody back like 30 or 40 years, but you can really like kind of track the changes in society in that short period. And I think sometimes that's something that people that resonates with people a lot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like when you see like the kind of similarities and differences kind of like pop out, like one of the things that I find, really interesting about footage filmed in Lerwick is that because the buildings are so old, like the kind of buildings and shop fronts kind of look exactly the same almost. It's just the signs that are different. So like we've got great footage we digitized recently from the 60s of somebody driving down Commercial Street with their camera and filming all the shops as they go by. And like you could be driving down Commercial Street today if it wasn't for the clothes people were wearing and things like that. Yeah. So it's interesting to see.
And I suppose as well, when you're watching it on a film, then you nearly feel like you're being drawn into it, into the scene as well, in a way that you maybe don't get through a photograph. And I was going to ask, what's the kind of oldest film that you have from Shetland?
The oldest material we've collected is from the 1930s. So we have some black and white film. Of things like the old St. Sunniva on the rocks at Moosa.
Oh, wow.
Some footage of that, and you can see like the kind of local people on the rocks kind of like surveying the wreck. And in my parents' house, they actually have a couple of doors and banisters from the wreck. So I think people were out there with their own boats with crowbars. Just like,
yeah. I think a lot of the houses are in Sandwick have got bits, so.
Yeah, it was a good day for the locals when that ship ran aground.
Yeah.
So we've got some kind of material from that period. It's mostly material we've collected is from the kind of 50s and 60s and 70s so far. But we have also collected some VHS tapes of material from the 90s and 80s. Like we got tapes of a Piper Alpha benefit concert that was held in the 80s, like maybe at the Shetland Marts. Mm-hmm. And a concert in Captain Flint's and football matches and this kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. even some more recent things on kind of camcorder tapes from like the little festivals and that kind of thing. Because, I mean, it's important to say as well that film we always speak about film being the most vulnerable medium, and it is most vulnerable, but also VHS tapes have got a limited lifespan of their own, and they will demagnetize over time too. And yeah. in the same way, if you put a VHS tape in your machine, it might play, but you know, it might get chewed up. You know, we all have memories from the 90s of our favorite tapes getting chewed up and how heartbreaking that was. So again, we would encourage people, if possible, not to watch those tapes, but to approach us or try and get them digitized themselves, because it's always best, if you are going to play it, it's better to play it once and get it digitized at the same time so you know it's protected.
Yeah. And also as well, just museum hat on again, that you'll be collecting from like yesterday, you kind of, it's not just stuff for the 1930s mm-hmm. and 40s that you're looking for, you'll be actively like looking for stuff today that'll be, that you can save for the next generation, because it's just as important for an organization like you to collect today.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of thinking about the future and what you want to share.
Oh, absolutely. And like born digital material is vulnerable in its own way as well. I mean, it can get lost just through kind of like misfilings, or hard drives can fail, and you know, all these kind of things. So like more recent material is also really important. I mean, I think, as I said, because we are such a small group, we've had to really kind of prioritize our efforts on trying to do the film first, but we'd love to do more, collecting more recent stuff and kind of thing, but we've just we've had to kind of prioritize the film stuff that we've identified so far, but hopefully we'll be able to expand our operation and do more of the more recent stuff too.
And FOC can support the charity too.
Yeah, we can also collect donations through our Facebook page as well. There's a wee button there, and I mean, all that that kind of helps us kind of build up the reserves we need to do the digitization, which is the most expensive outlier we have normally, is getting stuff digitized.
And how can FOC see what you've got? You've got a YouTube channel, and I think it's over 100 videos. So that's the best place for people to go and see what you have in the archive.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the YouTube channel has a selection of material that's publicly available. Like our grand total, I was trying to calculate up how much we've done. I think our grand total of digitized material at the moment is about 45 hours, all in all. But most of that is not publicly available yet, because it's still got to be catalogued and get the contract signed and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the YouTube channel is the best place to kind of get a feel for the stuff we've done so far. And there's a good mixture of stuff on there from the kind of 50s through to the 1970s. And yeah. We're currently in the process of getting our website redesigned. So that is currently in progress, and hopefully we'll be able to launch that soon. And that will also be a place where people can view the material, and there'll be some really good kind of like archive search functions on there. So they can kind of search the collection more thoroughly. So we're looking forward to getting that launched too.
And you've got some new films that you're going to be releasing shortly. Can you say a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So we were fortunate to get some money from Film Hub Scotland's Pitchpot online
film.
It's a Film Hub Scotland, and they had an online cinema fund. This was something they were keen to promote during the pandemic, obviously with traditional screenings not able to happen, supporting archives and community groups to hold online activities. So we were very grateful to get some money from them to digitize some new material, and our plan is to premiere that in an online broadcast on Facebook and YouTube in April.
And Greg, do's just working with us in their spare time, isn't he?
Yeah, I work full-time at STV, and I'm also doing a master's in part-time too, so like I'm kind of split in a lot of different directions.
Yeah how many films are you hoping to premiere in April?
Yeah, the plan is that we're going to have around 45 minutes of material curated in kind of one kind of broadcast event.
Uh-huh.
So the material that we've got kind of earmarked for that, we've got a mixture of stuff. We've got some material donated by Isabel Irvin, and she has some material that was filmed by her father Derek and her uncle John. And her uncle John was a teacher in Edinburgh. And every year he used to take students from kind of deprived areas of the city up to Shetland for a holiday, and he would film taking them around the Isles and kind of taking them on activities and stuff. So there's a really interesting mix of footage of them on the islands. They're at like the Samut Regatta, and probably 1960. I think the footage is from 1959 to about 1961. Yeah. And like it's great, like that footage, because you can see how excited they are to be up in Shetland at that age. And like Isabel has spoken about how like the impact on those kids of coming up to Shetland every year was massive on them. It completely opened their eyes to the kind of country living. And one of them actually loved Shetland so much he moved here, and apparently he still lives in Lerwick to this day.
Really? Yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
So there's like an interesting kind of mix of clips done by John Irvin. And then our kind of main event at the broadcast is we're going to show a 16mm color film donated by Janie Thomason that was filmed by her father James, and it's all about the herring industry. Yeah. His collection of films is really, really, really culturally significant, because it's 16mm, which is kind of news camera grade film. So most of our collection from film is 8mm or Super 8, which was typically what people had in their home cameras. So it was rare for an amateur filmmaker to have 16mm, which gives you such a great quality transfer. Oh. And it's in color and clearly so well taken care of and properly edited and properly structured documentaries. There's a whole collection of them that we're in the process of digitizing, and they're so fascinating to see. And they're just such an interesting record of life. So that's going to be our kind of main event. And something else that we were quite keen... Oh, I should say something else about that, actually. The Herring film came about because he was a butcher by trade, and he had a series of pop-up shops along the coast that followed the route of the herring shoals. And he'd open the shops during the herring season at each place, depending on where the boats were.
Oh, cool.
So that's how he was able to film all the boats, the journey of the kind of journey of the herring fleet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. And something that we're really keen to do for the broadcast event, that's kind of a new idea for us, mm-hmm. is that quite often people have fed back about archive screenings that they enjoy watching the footage, but they'd really appreciate a bit more historical context, so they can kind of understand more about the significance of what they're watching.
Yeah, because a lot of the time what we're seeing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a moving image rather than like what you would maybe think on as a film, a narrative that goes alongside it. Can you kind of explain that to us non-technical people?
Sure. So like normally the footage that we have in the archive, or the footage that we receive, is what we term kind of home movies. So like they don't necessarily, they aren't necessarily a structured story or a structured documentary with a beginning and a middle and an end. It's more of a snapshot of somebody's life. So there isn't a narrative in the kind of traditional documentary sense. I mean, what's interesting about James Thomason's films is that some of them were structured like documentaries and have like kind of title cards in between with some information, and like they are cut more like a narrative documentary, which kind of gives you more.
They don't have like a presenter doing like
no. And they're silent.
This is what you're seeing here.
Yeah, and like because there's no sound, that obviously has a huge impact, because you can't get information through a soundtrack or through a presenter.
When do we start seeing sound coming in? Sorry, I came nothing about the history of film.
That's fine. It was possible to record film with sound at that time in the 50s and 60s, but it was more expensive. Or you might not have had a camera or a sound recording equipment to capture the sound.
Like home, like folk that were just doing like a home video, they just didn't have the equipment to capture.
Yeah, I mean... It would have existed, but I mean, like, really, it was rare enough for people to have a cine camera at home. That was rare enough, and then to have the capacity to record sound as well, was even much. Like, there has been material that's been donated to the archive. There was a short film that was given to us, and we have a mute version of it. But the person that donated it did say that there was a soundtrack recorded separately. but that no longer survives. So sometimes there maybe might have been a separate soundtrack that you would have played too, but that's not made it.
So would you say that the bulk of what you have are like silent films?
Yeah, I mean, all the material that we've donated, that's from the 1930s up to the 1970s, is, with the exception, we have a couple of professional films from Jenny Gilbertson, mm-hmm. and I think one of those has got sound.
Yeah.
But all of the home video footage we've collected up to the 1980s is all silent.
Okay.
So there's no sound. It's only kind of in terms of home movies with our collection, it's really only when you start getting into the VHS collections where people had VHS video cameras, that's when the sound comes in.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you would have seen sound, more likely seen sound on professional documentaries from that period rather than home videos.
So that's why it's kind of so sporadic.
Yeah, and that's why having the context is so valuable, because you can kind of get some more information. So for this project, we decided that like we would approach local people who've got knowledge and interest in local heritage, like yourself, to record short video introductions for some of the pieces. I mean, I think that we're very keen that first and foremost we are a community-led organization. We're a community archive and a community charitable organization.
Yeah.
So we're very keen on the idea of having local people present films and provide and they can provide information about where it was filmed, or just like little kind of things to watch out for, or a bit of historical context, and all of that will just lead to a more kind of informative view and experience when viewing the film. So our plan is to kind of edit those in as well as the films, and hopefully have some instructions from the original donors as well, so they can speak a bit about who actually filmed it and some of the story behind there too.
Yeah, because that's always interesting too, is not just what the film is, but what it came from, why it was filmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. Like, we've always found in our activities, whenever we show films publicly, whether we've had screenings in country halls or in care homes or had films online, the knowledge and expertise that people can share with you, having seen that, it always blows us away. Like I shared a video on our Facebook page of the South Road in Lerwick being cleared of snow in the 60s, and people were able to say the year that snowblowers came to Shetland, were identifying how old the cars were based on the license plates and the tax discs, and they know, oh no, that road was widened in 1962, so it can't have been earlier than that. And it's really amazing the knowledge that people have, and we're so keen to try and capture that in any way we can, and then incorporate that into the archive information, so that just to kind of preserve all that context, because the film is really only half of the story. Like, the other half is the knowledge about who's there, and
it's the same as in museums, that you get an object, and like, it might be this pain, and a pain is just a pain, but when you hear that it maybe belonged to, I don't know, somebody that was filling in the logbook on a Shetland bus boat, then it suddenly becomes more than a pain. So it's always a bit more than, so much more, it's just the film or the object.
Yeah, you need the story as well, don't you? You need the story to go along with the object or the artifact.
Yeah. And what would you say, like, in terms of the collection as a whole, generally, what does it look like? What are kind of the main themes that run through the collection as a whole, like, in general?
Mm-hmm. In general, I'd say there's kind of there's three main themes that run through. So you get home movie footage, so footage that people filmed with their own lives, like going to the beach and in their gardens, and just spending time with their families and recording things like christenings and that kind of stuff. A second theme would be, there's a bit about working life. So we have some VHS tapes that were recorded in the 80s on board some fishing boats and on fishing trips, which is quite interesting, seeing that kind of production of the fishing industry, plus the herring film, as I've already mentioned, and some bits and pieces. There's some footage as well Isabel's films about inside a weaving factory, so you can see like people using looms, and crofting as well. Obviously, I labeled that as well, like the kind of working life on a croft is well represented. And a third one would be local events. So we've got a lot of films of Apelia burn-ins, community regattas. There's a great film film by James Thomason where he was asked to do a film of the Queen visiting Lerwick in 1960, and he was the kind of official filmmaker of that. So he was at all the kind of like stops, because she did like a tour of the whole island, or a tour of some of the island, and went to like an agricultural show, and like was a huge crowd in Lerwick to see her arrive. It was the first time that a sovereign and reigning sovereign had visited Shetland in hundreds of years, I think. Mm-hmm. So things like that, I would say, like events. I mean, like as is always the case, notable events is when people usually take out their cameras. So so you get like a great kind of feel for the kind of things that people in Shetland went to, and you know, what they did for recreation.
And on a personal level, what's thy favourite? What's thy favourite film that you've got? What do you think is like a real hidden gem among your collection? One that you would, if you had to save one for a fire in the archive, which one?
Oh, I can't even imagine that scenario. It's too upsetting.
I can. Horrible. If you was writing disaster plan, what would the first film they would save be?
Well, it would have to be, I think it would be that film of the Queen's visit in 1960, because it's such a historically significant event, and it's so well filmed, and it was in such good condition. When the footage came back from the lab, I was completely blown away by the quality of it. The fact that it was in color, news grade, and you could see the faces of the people in the crowd watching and how excited they were. And I was completely blown away with that. So in terms of historical significance, I think that would definitely be the one. If I had to save one, that's the one I would save. And similarly, he also filmed Prince Philip visiting in 1953, and that is also in color and 60mm, and it's amazing seeing footage from that era at such quality. But in terms of kind of, other than the kind of big historical ones we have to save, one of my personal quirky films that we have is a film which had been accidentally double exposed. So may remember from having still cameras, sometimes you would like take a photograph, and if you forgot to wind it on, or if you had a mechanism and it's jammed, and you would accidentally take the second photo and it'd be layered over the first. And this could also happen with cine film if you did it, so you could record over it twice. And this happened with one of our films, but thematically it's so interesting because somebody originally filmed a kind of sailing regatta in the 1970s, and then double exposed it with the burning of an Apelia galley. So you have these kind of footage of these like sailing boats in the sea superimposed with a burning Viking galley on top.
Oh wow!
And thematically, it's just
that one on your YouTube.
It is, yeah. It is. I'll send you a link. It looks almost like a kind of experimental art film, like this. But I think just done completely by accident. But it's a quirky, interesting one.
Yeah. And is there anything else that you thinks that you wants to add that you thinks I need to include?
We'd be really keen for kind of more people to get involved with the archive. Would be great, because there's so much more that we would like to do, but we're just limited with what we can achieve as a small group. So also. Even though, and we're always interested to hear about film or video that people have in their collections, so that we're aware of it. And then it means that when we are able to kind of get some money together, we can identify exactly what it is we need to be moving on to.
Yeah, I think like in terms of getting more people involved, when you say to folk that you need like people for like cataloging, that can seem like it might be quite complicated, but like for somebody that's maybe not that techie, is it complicated, or could they just watch the film and like just write it up, or do they have to get involved via a database?
No, I mean, like we're kind of switching over our systems at the moment, but basically we would send people a link to watch the film, a private link, to Vimeo, and they could either type their comments just on in the kind of comments list below. So it's very easy to watch it and type it. Yeah. Or if people preferred, they could write it out by hand. And then we could type it up. And like it's the kind of thing that really, like, you don't have to be a kind of museum level curator to do that kind of thing, or to have, you know, we don't expect people to have an encyclopedic knowledge of absolutely everything there is to know about Shetland. It's more about kind of like just kind of watching it and taking note of the time codes and kind of giving us the kind of skeleton of what's in it, and then we can always add to it in the future and develop it.
So it's just getting keywords and things in there and a general line of what the film is about.
We'd be very, very kind of like happy to kind of match people up with films they're particularly interested in, or films from their area of Shetland, or anything like that. So we'd always provide, you know, as much support as required to help people do that. But it's really just like part of that kind of aim to try and record as much of the local knowledge as possible and like that kind of context for the films. Because like we're always so kind of conscious of the fact as well is that as more time goes on, there's fewer people left that were actually there when the material was filmed, so you do lose those memories as time goes on. So
yeah,
trying to halt that process with archiving, I suppose, record as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel really guilty that I've not offered to help you catalogue yet. I love watching all the old films and stuff, and it'll be good for me to see them. So send me one a month and I'll do it.
Cool. Okay, I'd happily do that.
That's a deal. I'll do one a month.
Something else you could say actually is that being a cataloger, or however you want to describe it, it kind of gives you a sneak first look at the material, because it's material that we haven't made publicly available yet.
There's so many people that I kind of would absolutely love to do something with, but they're probably like too apprehensive to get in touch with. You kind of, I'm like thinking about my dad. He would absolutely love it, but he'd be too scared. He didn't do it properly. It's trying to persuade people that they are capable of doing it.
I know, like maybe we should look at having some kind of public event where we demonstrate how it's done. Maybe that might kind of make people feel more like it's a. Like we've had to kind of pull back from it recently because we had to get our website completely overhauled. And the procedure was a bit more complicated with our old website and content management system. But now, because we're using Vimeo more for storage, it will be a lot more straightforward, because you can just watch the video and just type it. And like, it doesn't matter if they're in the wrong order or anything like that, you know, because we can rearrange it ourselves.
That's the thing. Whatever a volunteer puts in, like you'll look over it before it becomes public. So there's no mistake that anybody makes that cannot be changed.
And we can always update it in the future or change it if we need to. And like anything on Vimeo, any Vimeo like links like that, they wouldn't be able to delete them by accident or anything like that, or damage them. Like there's nothing they could do by watching them that could cause any harm at all. So like there's no pressure in that way either. It isn't like we're giving people hard drives and like saying, okay, that's the only copy of those films. So people are just afraid of doing things wrong. I think they're kind of afraid to kind of put themselves out there.
Especially like older generation, and they're the ones that you would really want doing it, because they've got all the information.
Ideally, what we would like to have is somebody on the committee whose main role is to engage with volunteers like that and to kind of organize those kind of events and really kind of be like a point of contact. But I mean, we've just been so stretched just trying to do the core activities.
Send me some videos and I will catalog them for you, because I can catalog.
And you've got such great knowledge as well.
I've spent 10 years cataloging.
Something else I could tell you, actually, which is probably not fit for printing, but like, another favorite film that we've had come back from the lab is because as I said, quite often we would send things away and wouldn't really know what was on them, so it would be a complete mix when it came back. Which is great because like it was like a nice surprise. So I got this years ago. I got this hard drive back from the film lab, and I was flicking through the files and saying, "Oh yeah, there's some Lyrics, some Soundwix, some this, all this and that." early hours things. And then I got to this video and it was like this black and white film of a woman in her bedroom with some shopping bags. And I was like, oh, she's maybe been shopping in Lerwick. And she put them on her bed and took out this lingerie. And I was like, oh, maybe she's been to J.R. White's. And then, and then she started getting undressed. And it was a vintage erotic film from the 60s.
Wow!
Called High Fashion Lowdown. It wasn't anyone in Shetland. It was like, okay. I think it was something that somebody had bought. like basically pornography from the 60s. We haven't made that one publicly available. We didn't think it was quite appropriate, but it's so interesting to have.
Oh, Greg, that's so funny. It must just be so interesting to see what's on some of the films and just, you're never quite sure what you're getting back. But on a serious note, it's fantastic what the Shetland Film Archive do. And I guess the amount of Shetland's history and heritage that you've been able to preserve and kind of ensure that they'll live on into the future. So it's a fantastic legacy that the Film Archive is leaving for Shetland. And hopefully there'll be somebody listening to this today that'll get in touch and email you and offer their services cataloguing.
Super. Thanks for your help, Laurie. That was really great.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Right.
See you. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening. This podcast can only be made possible by my supporters on Patreon, so a huge thank you to all my patrons. If you would like to support me in bringing you more of these shows, you can sign up and become a patron. You will find details about how to sign up in the show notes below or at www.patreon.com and just search Shetland with Laurie. And remember, you can find more on Instagram and give me a follow at Shetland with Laurie. So thank you once again for listening, and we will see you here next time. And in the meantime, safe and happy travels.